You are listening to KAYT-FM, Gina, Alexandria, 88.1, K255-BT, Monroe, West Monroe, 98.9 FM, K223-BI, Greenwood, Shreveport, 92.5 FM, KQJO, St. Joseph, Louisiana, Natchez, Mississippi, 99.3 FM, and K261EB, Lake Charles, 100.1 FM, and online at www.kaytfm.com, the heart and soul of Central Louisiana.
Subject, come see a man. You don't mind, shake your neighbor's hand and tell him or her, come see a man. Yeah. leaving Jerusalem and Judea with rigid, antagonistic, and angry attitudes toward him, Jesus turned his footsteps northward toward Galilee.
Yes, sir.
And upon approaching the area called Samaria, he was told not to go to Samaria. The devout Jews and those who thought themselves to be sanctimonious looked upon the Samaritans with contempt. They regarded them as being an immoral people and felt that their coarse conduct and their immorality would somehow rub off on them and besmirch their supposedly to be white and sinless soul. So as he went toward Galilee, going through Samaria, the 12 disciples said unto him, Master, it would be better for us and all concerned if we would reach Galilee another way. Let us bypass Samaria and go to Galilee the roundabout way. But ignoring the suggestion of his 12 disciples, he said unto them, I must needs go through Samaria. In other words, it is necessary and absolutely mandatory that I go through Samaria. I have a divine appointment that must be fulfilled there. I must needs go through Samaria. Now, the reason why the disciples were so reluctant and hesitant about Jesus going to Samaria was because of an age-old racial feud that had existed between the Samaritans and the Jews for many, many centuries.
Yeah.
After the Babylonian exile, you remember when Babylon conquered Jerusalem and put those Jews into slavery or captivity.
Yeah.
They robbed Jerusalem of their best and most productive minds. They took from Jerusalem the best doctors, the best lawyers, the best teachers, the best soothsayers, the best philosophers, the best scribes and sages, carry them into the lowlands of Babylon and left in Jerusalem the Jews who you could consider as weaklings, those who were ill-defined, retarded, the diseased Jews, the Jews who were handicapped. They left them in Jerusalem. For they wanted in captivity only those Jews who were strong.
Yeah.
Only those who could labor, those who could sing, the Jews who could serve.
Yeah.
And the weak, feeble, feverish Jews were left in Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Now, when these Jews that had been taken from Jerusalem into Babylonian exile got down into captivity, though they were succumbed with a pagan and heathenistic environment, they still managed to keep their bloodstreams pure. In other words, they had no sexual intercourse with anyone other than other Jews and were looked upon as being what you might categorize thoroughbred Jews because their bloodstreams were pure. But those Jews who stayed in Jerusalem, the weaklings, allowed themselves to mix and mingle and intermarry with neighboring and surrounding countries. And their bloodstreams thereby became polluted with other nationalities and races. Well, when Persia captured the Babylonian Empire, Cyrus, who captured Babylon, under his so-called Edict of Cyrus, did he issue a mandate saying that all Jews in Babylon were free to go back to their homeland. And when he issued that royal mandate, these Jews returned to Babylon, or returned rather to Jerusalem from Babylon. And when they got back to Jerusalem and found that their fellow brothers and sisters in race and nationality had mixed and mingled with other neighboring and surrounding countries, they became infuriated because they regarded them as being inferior. And because they had kept their bloodstreams pure, they regarded themselves as superior Jews. So they organized their forces and ran these weak Jews out of Jerusalem. And they settled on the outskirts of Jerusalem in a little place called Samaria and came to be known as the Samaritans. So this racial prejudice and jealousy and feud had existed between Samaritans and Jews for many, many centuries. So when the disciples suggested to Jesus going another way, he responds, "No, I'm going through Samaria. I know there are racial prejudices there, and I realize that we will not be received hospitably. I know that my life is in danger, but I must needs go through Samaria." When he got to the country of Samaria, he went to a little city called Sychar. And there he sat upon a well that time has come to call Jacob's Well. Here we see what theologians call wayside chance. Chance not in the sense that here is about to happen an accident. Yeah. But chance in the sense that here is an opportunity. Yeah. Yeah. Because if Jesus had gotten there half hour earlier and this woman had come to the well, yeah, the disciples would have been there and the interview between her and Christ would have never been. Yeah. Yeah. If he had gotten there at the ninth hour in Jewish calculation, which is really 3 o'clock, instead of the sixth hour, which is 12 o'clock, then more than likely Jesus would have been way down the road en route to Galilee. But within the providential will of God, as God would have it be, he got there and she got there at 12 noon, the sixth hour. And here sat my Lord on the well, tired, thirsty, wearied, worn, sitting at Jacob's well. Or I see my Lord as he sits there, looking down into the cool depths, seeing an occasional gleam of the water far below, but the reverie of Christ was disturbed by coming footsteps. And as he turns his head and sees a woman, he spots her, the woman of Samaria, coming to the well to draw water. That's some things about this woman. You never met her. I never met her. I doubt seriously if any author or painter has ever painted a picture of her so that we could focus our minds on her, but still she leaves an indelible mark and a definite impression upon all of our imagination. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This woman is not too young. She's not too old. Obviously, there is some grace and charm in her personhood, because as she walks with the water pots perfectly balanced upon her head, her throat round and full, I see in this woman unmistakable traces of beauty. And I feel safe in saying that, because there had to be something of beauty in order for this woman to have attracted as many men and husbands as she had. But I also see in this woman, in her eyes, I see sadness, weariness. I see see warmness. I see in her a woman who expectancy or expectation has faded into oblivion. The eyes who looks out of the soul of this woman are eyes of one who no longer hopes for anything, expects anything, contemplates anything. She's not looking for anything new, anything different, and all how grueling and sad life is. When life brings you to the point wherein you no longer hope for anything, you no longer look forward to anything, how grueling, how cumbersome it is to have a life so sad with no hope. But such was the case. With a woman of Samaria who came to Jacob's well to draw water from that well. Let me describe, if you please, the status of this woman that Jesus is about to start his evangelistic campaign. There are certain things about her that the Bible does not say, but reading between the lines, we can automatically assume. Listen, number one, nobody would have ever gone to a town, ask for this woman of such a caliber to head or lead Christ's evangelistic campaign. Nobody would have ever gone to that town saying, I need someone to head my soul-winning campaign. Show me to the town's whore. Nobody. This woman who I'm talking about was of the caliber of a common prostitute. She lived on the level of a common, ordinary, everyday whore. This woman was a home breaker. She was a peace breaker. Home wrecker. She was an opportunist. She was conceited. She was radical. Selfish. Immoral. Indiscreet. She was inconsiderate. And do you see anybody going to this town saying, we gotta win souls? Show me the town's whore. But how awful it would have been if Jesus had based upon what she was, had said she won't do. If I had been the judge, or you had been the judge, we would have looked at her being oversexed, at her being an opportunist, at her being selfish. Because all of us as people, for the most part, are nothing but a bunch of look at her. Thanks be to God that Jesus does not look at. You know, a lot of folk that we look over, we ought to look at. But thanks be to God that Jesus does not look at. He looks beyond our faults and sees our need. To the dialogue that's about to take place between Jesus and the woman at the well. Listen. Give me, I pray thee, a drink of water. Now, obviously, that was just the way that Jesus had of trying to strike a conversation with this woman. This was just like an entree. You know how you nitpick at some people to try to strike a few words? Nobody can make me believe that he really wanted a drink of water. No, no, he sat on Jacob's well. And the fact that he sat on Jacob's well, there was nothing but a well sitting on a well. He didn't want no water. Well, you can't make me believe that. Remember now that he had stayed out in the wilderness without food or water. Yeah. for 40 days and 40 nights. And the woman went about 7 miles from Jerusalem to Samaria. Now, surely the God, if he could do without water 40 days and 40 nights, he could have done without water for 7 little teenage miles. He did not want no water. How could he want water when he had declared that he would be in men and women bubbling waters of everlasting joy? He didn't want no water. Plus, with his father, you know, when they destroyed the world, it was he with his father that destroyed the world by letting it rain 40 days and 40 nights. He didn't want no water. Plus, back in creation, you know, he held the waters in the hem of his garment and scooped out the sea with the palm of his hand. He didn't want no water. Plus, down in Canaan, at the marriage feast, he turned water, H2O, into wine. Jesus did not want any water. That's a mere entree, as a kind of come on, as a mechanism of striking conversation. Give me, I pray thee.
Yeah.
A drink of water, half sarcasm, half in surprise or irony. This woman says, how is it that you, a Jew, have condescended, humbled yourself, come down low enough to ask me, a Samaritan, to give you, a Jew, a drink of water? How can you do that? Her previous experiences had taught her that never in her lifetime would she see a Jew turn a Samaritan a favor. So how is it that you, a Jew, ask me, a Samaritan, to give you a drink of water? But Jesus said, lady, if thou knewest the gift of God, if thou knewest who it is that asks you for a drink of water, instead of me asking you, you would ask me to give you a drink of the living water. If you only knew that I am Daniel Stone, hewed out of a mountain, destroying the high gods in battle. If you only knew that I am Job's horse that pours in a bag. If you knew that I was Isaiah's bright and morning star, then woman, I wouldn't have to ask you, but you would ask me to give you a drink of the living water. This woman says, in response, Jesus goes on and says, your water, if I drink it, I will thirst again. But if you drink my water, you will never thirst again. Never thirst again. Never, ever, ever, never thirst.
Yes, sir.
Again. You know, they got this Prairie mineral water we drink, but no matter what kind of water you drink, you're going to want some more. Drink here today, there tomorrow, there tomorrow, there tomorrow. Thirst always comes back. And how synonymous to life thirst is. Because the things of this world do not satisfy the heart. Have you noticed no matter how much things you get, they just don't satisfy? Have you noticed the more you get, the more you want? Leads an unquenchable He gave us lessons in wine, women, song, dance, agriculture, architecture, and statecraft. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Was such a great lover until when he made love to the Queen of Sheba, she went away running, talking about the hair ain't never been told. He summed it up by saying, vanity of vanities, yeah, it all has been vanity. And the reason why your heart can't be satisfied with the things of the world is because the heart is the one place that God puts immortality. And things cannot satisfy that which is immortal. That which is corruptible cannot satisfy that which is incorruptible. If y'all drink your water later, I will thirst again. If you drink my water, you will never thirst again. Though you may want things and things and things, when you get Christ and show enough getting, you won't thirst no more. That's why the hymnologist says, this world ain't none of my home. I'm just passing by. My treasures and my hopes are laid up on high, and I can't feel at home in this world anymore. So, woman, you're talking about one kind of water. I'm talking about another. I'm talking about the water of salvation, the water of grace, the water of everlasting life. But the woman still not understanding what he means about being thirstless and never thirsting again. She says, well, my luck has been running so bad. Everything I touch turns to soot. Things been going down, down, down. I've tried everything else, mister. Give me a drink of water that I'll never thirst again. Now, in this unusual, dramatic interview, if you didn't know the story and had never heard it before, there's no way in the world you would ever know what Christ's next words were to this woman. You never could imagine. This is what he said. Go call thy husband. You know, jumping all the way from water. Husband. Never thirst. Call husband. Wanted to focus in on this woman's sin, and he had to shock her consciousness. Until God makes us aware of our sin, he can never get to your heart. So he was cueing in on this woman's sin. Thus he said, go call thy husband. Now, it may be different to you, and it may be different to me. To you, he may say, go call that wife. Thou hast wronged. Yours may be, go call that child. Thou hast neglected. Go call that mother. Go call thy father. Go call that bank book. Go call your last business transaction. Go call thy husband. This woman, pure out of instinct, involuntarily, automatically throws up her guards. And you can't get mad with her because, see, she's trying to protect the skeletons in her closet. See, She's trying to do just like you and me, with the, trying to cover up by her sin. So automatically she throws up her defenses and shouts back. He says, call thy husband, she regains her poise and assurance. Tries to make him believe beyond a shadow of doubt. She says, no husband. Now she was really lying because she was trying to deceive Christ.
Yes.
And anytime you try to deceive, that's what a lie is.
Yes.
So she was really lying, but Jesus took what she said to mean it literally speaking. He said, you're right. You don't have no husband, because honey, you've had five. And the one you got now ain't yours. Stop with five. They go out talking about the woman had five husbands, but I see six. Because she said, you had five and the one. You got it now. It's not yours.
Yeah.
Now, don't you see that this meeting is no accident? It ain't by no chance. Because Jesus didn't have to go down to the courthouse and look up her record. He didn't have to ask nobody about her birth certificate. He didn't ask the baby what sign you're born under. He didn't ask nobody in her house about what was going on at her house. None of that. So it had to be providential. Go call thy husband. And she said, I have no husband. Then on down in that chapter, you read where it says, she ran through town and told the people, come see a man, told me everything. Now, obviously, John left some of that out. Could have gotten lost in the translations or in the archives of history, but he left some of it out. Because we don't see that. We have to look between the lines now. And reading in my mind's eye, I see Jesus probably read the woman.
Yeah.
Said, baby, you're right. Said, because when you were a little girl, your mama and your daddy did some of everything in front of you. They did all kinds of sin and wickedness. So when you got 13, your house had become a hell house and you wanted to get away from home. So when you were 13, you married a man 31. But by the time you were 18, you saw that he was too old. So you married you a younger man. But by the time you got 23, you start thinking, this young man is too immature. So you thought you would marry a man who was about something and wouldn't marry an educated man. But by the time you got to be 28, you said, well, now, this educated man can't buy me all I need. So I'm going to marry me a rich man. But by the time you got to be 33 years old, you saw that there are some things money can't buy. And so you went off and you left him. And the woman, I see her trying to walk away. And she said, come back, I ain't through, lady, because the one you got now ain't yours. In other words, you living in a dirt. Common law. In other words, sister, you shack. Still, honey, the one you got now ain't direction is given. So you can go home and get a phone call. But when he calls you next, you make sure you tell him, I said, the one you got now ain't yours. He ain't talking about me because I'm married. I got my papers on that. That don't make no difference, honey. You can put on your long white gown. Put a white veil over your face. Let rice be thrown all over you while you carry your bulkhead. And strut down the aisle to the tune of Here Come the Bride. With your license in your hand and still the one.
The one you have now is not yours.
Lord. And obviously Jesus struck a nerve. You know, sometimes when a dentist is drilling down in teeth for cavity, every now and then he strikes what we call a nerve. Oh, Lord. And it was something like this that this woman felt when Jesus read. And this time he himself did not have to change the subject. Oh, Lord. But then this woman changed the subject all by herself. And when Jesus said, "You have five husbands, and the one you have now is not yours." Well, she changed the subject, and I heard her saying, "Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet." And you Jews believe in worshiping up in Mount Zion. Oh, Lord. And I heard Jesus saying, "Sister, you're wrong about my God." Because my God is not located in no geographical place. Yeah, but my God is a God of spirit. And they that worship him gotta worship him in spirit and in truth. Oh, yes, I have. And I heard saying, "Well, Jesus, I'm going on like I was going." Because, you see, my people here in Samaria, well, we're waiting on the coming of the true Messiah. And all our prophets and forefathers have said that the Messiah will one day come. And when the Messiah comes, he's going to turn the crooked way straight. And he'll make the hilly way level. Yeah, every valley will be exalted. And I'm standing and I'm waiting here on the Messiah. Oh, Lord. But then I heard Jesus saying, "Lady, just think about what I told you." And she said, "Sir, are you the Messiah?" Jesus said, "Yeah, I am the Messiah. I am the Savior. I am the promised King." Oh, Lord. And he began to talk with that woman. And that's something about talking with Jesus that changes everything. Oh, yes, it does. Those folks had it right when they said a long time ago, "Well, you just have a little talk with Jesus, and he'll make everything all right." Do I have a witness? Jesus stood there and began talking with that woman. My God. Well, her heart opened up. Praises began rolling out. And grace started rolling in. Yeah. Immorality began rolling out. And morality started rolling in. Oh, yes, it did. She became a new creature. She had a new walk. She had a new talk. My Lord. But isn't that just like Jesus? But Paul said, "If any man be in Christ Jesus, he is a new creature." Yeah. All things are passed away, and the whole all things have become new. Do you hear what I'm saying? You got new ideas and new ideals. New inspiration, new aspiration. Start holding a new conversation, looking with a new observation, sitting in a new situation. Start counting with a new calculation. All things. Did y'all hear what I'm saying? This is my last night in town, so all things have become new. Yes, it has. I used to hear old preachers saying, "When
she became a new creature. Her water pot went one way, and she went running another way. Yeah. That water pot was a symbol of that woman's past. Did you ever understand? That water pot was a symbol of her adultery. All the prejudices she had, all the late nights she spent. Yeah. She left it behind. Oh, Lord. That tale I need to tell you tonight. I don't understand how it is. People can claim I've been born again. I don't see how people can say I've been washed in the blood of the Lamb. I don't see how you can claim to be a child of God, and yet you still mean, you're still dirty, you're still hateful, you still walk down, you still talk down, you still feel down, still look down, you still roll down. It ain't been no change. I want to have a witness here. If you know the Lord, somebody ought to see it tonight. If you know the Lord, you ought to show some sign. Yes, he is. She saw her undertake the man. Put up your embalming fool. Stop your horse wheels from rolling. I'm the man who is the resurrection, and he is the life. Yes, he is. I'm gonna leave it when I tell you. Oh, come see. Do I have a witness about this man, Jesus? Y'all know him, don't you? I'm talking about a man. Hey, my Jesus is able tonight. Be this man, Jesus, is a bridge over troubled water. See, the man, Jesus, is a company keeper that wants for me when I'm lonesome. Traps for me. Yes, he does. Yeah, he's a jealous God. You all hear what I'm saying? Yeah, he's King of Kings, and he's Lord of Lords. Him, the man Jesus, is merciful tonight. And in it, he's all you need. Oh, he's Omega, the last and the end. He provides for you whenever you are in need. Q, he is the question, but then he is the answer. R, the man Jesus, the man Jesus, the man Jesus, he is a rock in a weary land. Yes, he's a shelter in a time of a storm. He talks for you when you can't say a mumbling word. You, he understands, he understands, he understands my rising and my falling. He gives me the victory tonight. God, yeah, he's a way out of no way, a wheel in the middle of a wheel.
hear an x-ray, see the smile in your face, but that sound burn out in your heart. Why? The man Jesus tonight, he's Yahweh, Elohim, Jehovah, and El Shaddai, and Z, he's the singer of my life. That's all I gotta tell you this evening. You may not hear me no more. You may not see me no more. But you remember the last thing you heard me say. Come see a man. The sorrow and problem you have.
This is the 70,000 watt voice of the community. KAYT. Gina Alexandria.
to praise something or someone with a loud voice, with a loud, exuberant voice. So therefore, we come right now to Shabbat the Lord, our God. Train up a child in the way that he should go, so that when he's old, he won't depart from it. For out of the mouths of babes come perfected praise. We invite you to come and Shabbat the Lord with us. Come on and put those hands together as we begin to just praise and magnify the Lord our God. For he is worthy of our praise.
Hallelujah.
He's a great, awesome God. He's a mighty God. Wonderful counselor. Hey, yeah.